If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I hid in an abandoned barn. I wasn't alone. I backpack around the country. Sometimes I catch a ride with the occasional semi-driver, but mostly I walk. Everything I need is strapped to my back, and I live simply. Most of the time, it's a good life. That's not to say there aren't downsides. I've been mugged a couple of times, spent nights shivering myself to sleep, and been chased off by crotchety old farmers, sometimes at gunpoint. Lately, I've been drifting through Nebraska and Iowa, where the cornfields stretch on forever, rustling in the breeze. I take meals where I can, and I'm not above scavenging from the trash. I was digging through one such dumpster when I heard the distant crackle of thunder. The storm had been building all afternoon, the sky bruising at the edges, thick clouds swallowing the last hints of sunlight. When the first droplets hit, cold and sharp, I knew I would be walking through a downpour soon if I didn't find shelter. I took a back road. No cars passed. Just telephone lines, cattle, and fences. That's when I saw it. Far across an empty stretch of land, past the buck and pole fences and the swaying thistles. A house, dark and silent, its windows boarded over like lidded eyes. Beyond it, set further back from the road, stood a barn. Peeling red paint, roof sagging at one corner, its wide doors slightly ajar. Something about it made me stop. Maybe the way the last of the light caught on the slanted roof. Maybe the way the shadows pooled too thickly around the entrance. I hesitated. The storm was moving in fast. Wind picked up, whipping through the fields, hissing through the stalks of dead grass. I could keep walking, hope to find shelter somewhere else, but I didn't want to stay in the house. I knew that much. The barn seemed like the safer bet. Lightning split the sky. The rain came harder, soaking through my jacket. The fence was easy to slip through, the mud sucking at my boots as I crossed the field. The house loomed as I passed it, its presence heavy, watching. The barn doors creaked as I pushed them open. The smell hit me first. Damp hay, old wood, something else underneath, something sour. Inside, it was darker than I expected. The rain on the metal roof echoed, hollow and rhythmic, a sound I normally found comforting. But here, it felt different, deeper, like it was coming from beneath the floor. I hesitated, scanning the space. Empty stalls. A gutted tractor half buried in the shadows. loose hay scattered across the dirt. No signs of life. I climbed into the loft, keeping my back to the wall as I unrolled my sleeping bag. The storm raged outside, wind howling through the cracks in the barn walls. I fell into a tangled sleep. A sound jolted me awake. Something rattled in the distance, back near the house. I crept out of my sleeping bag and climbed down the groaning ladder. I flicked the light on and stepped outside. The hail still peppered me as I crossed the stretch towards the house. Behind it, a set of storm cellars sat against the ground, one of the doors thrashing up and down, caught in the wind. The basement beyond churned my stomach, the stench of decay thick and cloying as it wafted up. One door remained intact while the other hung open, a splintered board jutting from its frame, jagged nails protruding like teeth where they had once held it shut. They had secured both doors in place, yet now one gaped open, the barrier broken. A tingle of doubt crept through me as I wondered if the doors had been forced from within or if the wind had somehow torn them loose. But the damage was too deliberate, too heavy. Something with weight had done this. I liked this place less and less. Being this close to the house made my skin crawl, though I couldn't put my finger on why. Then I heard it. A rattle at the barn doors behind me, where all my belongings were. I turned. One of the red barn doors quivered like a lip, hanging slightly farther open than I had left it. Another trick of the mind, I told myself. But this place, it felt like stepping into the wrong part of a bad neighborhood. The kind with pit bulls chained up in front yards, where furniture sat on the lawn. The kind where a wrong turn could get you mugged. The feeling sank into my gut like teeth. And yet, there wasn't another soul for miles, and I didn't have any other choice. I walked back to the barn, flashlight in hand. Then I saw them. Footprints. Bare feet in the mud, long toenails trailing deep in the earth. The prints led towards the barn. I traced them back with my light. They came from the storm cellar. I needed to grab my things and leave. I pulled the barn door back and shone my flashlight inside. The hinges groaned. The beam of my flashlight cut through the gloom. A woman stood with her back to me. Hail clung to the greasy strands of her gray hair. Her clothing hung loose and ragged, sleeves torn, fabric stiff with old stains.
"That you?"
Her voice cracked, raspy through a throat that sounded raw. Slowly, she turned. Her movements were wrong, too stiff, like she wasn't used to them. Her face was a mask of sunken gray lines. Patches of hair were missing, exposing smooth, pale scalp. The sockets where her eyes had been were hollow and wet. Her thin lips, shriveled and gray like dried sardines, barely pulled back enough to reveal teeth like worn tombstones. She sucked at the air, a wet, rattling whistle. I stood frozen. My heart thundered. My brain refused to process what I was seeing. She took a staggered step forward. Her dress, torn to shreds, slipped from her shoulders. A sagging breast peeked through, hollow where the nipple should have been. The flesh was gnawed, as if something had chewed on her. Large teeth marks sank deep into the skin. I backed away, slow, pulse hammering in my throat. She walked with a hitch, her torso lifting too much with each step, one hand clutching her chest like she was holding herself together.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
My backpedaling led me to the barn doors. And then I felt it. Meaty fingers hooked into my shoulder, cold as marble, stiff but strong. The grip was steady, not yanking, not shoving, just holding me in place, something testing my weight. My breath caught.
"If it ain't Ben,"
she murmured, lips barely forming the words, voice thick with something rotten, something wet.
"Then we got a trespasser."
The stench rolled over to the back of my neck like heat off a carcass left too long in the sun. It clung to my skin, bloated, heavy with something rotten. My stomach twisted. Bile crept up my throat. I didn't dare turn my head. She took another step forward, unsteady, shivering like something barely holding together. But I knew what was pressing into my lower back now. Three dull points, nudging at my spine. A pitchfork. Not yet breaking skin, but promising the possibility.
"It's me," I blurted, throat tight. "It's Ben."
She stopped, listened. The rattling hail filled the space between us, drumming hollow against the barn roof.
"Don't sound like Ben."
Her jaw hung slack, words thick, like she was rolling them around before spitting them out. The fingers on my shoulder tightened. The pitchfork pressed in a fraction more. I swallowed.
"It's me. I'm just under the weather."
The lie tumbled out dry, weak. She cocked her head, sniffing the air like she could smell the truth. Those empty sockets, slick and glistening, twitched slightly as if searching for me. Her face was unreadable, but I felt the shift in her posture, the hesitation, the way she leaned in just slightly, considering. The silence stretched too long, my pulse throbbing. The grip on my shoulder didn't loosen. Finally, she exhaled, slow and deliberate.
"Let's get inside then."
Her voice scraped against the air. Her tongue flicked out, pale, poked with holes, slick as a worm, tasting the space between us. The hand peeled away from my shoulder, slow and deliberate. The prongs of the pitchfork scraped against the dirt floor, dragging just enough to make my skin crawl. The weight of it lingered, a quiet, unspoken threat. I turned, and he was there. A looming figure in a rotting wool coat, the fabric sagging with filth. His frame still carried the ghost of old strength, though his flesh had turned pale, slack, lifeless. His eyes were gone, dark, yawning sockets. Loose skin hung from his neck in ragged strips, peeling like the rind of an overripe orange. His breath wheezed through the moist, ruined tunnel of his stratia. In the dim glow of my flashlight, I caught glimpses of raw, pulpy layers beneath the gaps in his flesh. His hair, like hers, was patchy and thin, matted with filth. The dampness clung to him, something that brought to mind a corpse hauled from the sea. Something that had no business moving anymore. They led me towards the house. When she stumbled past me to take the lead, I caught a glimpse of the gleaming bone through the raw nest of her scalp. The air thickened with the smell of old death. My fists clenched, my knuckles burned white. Fear had taken root in my stomach, deep, and it was starting to bloom. There was no one for miles, no one to hear me scream. I had no choice. So, I followed them into the storm cellar, my feet dragging. My grip tightened around the flashlight. The walls were damp with black mold, sagging in places, water streaking down in thin trails. The lumbering figure thumped down the steps behind me, still gripping the pitchfork. His gaping mouth worked at the air. She hobbled forward. The room was lined with broken-down shelves, rusted cans scattered across the floor. A folding table sat in the middle. Four chairs slid into place around it. Thunder rumbled outside. The man turned and pulled the storm shutters closed, plunging the room into suffocating darkness. My flashlight was still gripped in my palm, its cast stretching shadows across the damp walls. I imagined them down here before I arrived, alone, sitting in the dark. The thought sent a shudder through me. Were they alive? Were they walking corpses? They smelled dead, but they acted alive.
"Sit," she murmured. "Please."
I hesitated, then slowly lowered myself into one of the chairs. The air was frigid, the kind of cold that settled deep in the bones. Everything in me screamed that I shouldn't be here. The large male stood in the corner, motionless but breathing. She shuffled into the back room, her steps wet against the concrete. Her shoulders arched forward, not from pain but something deeper, something mechanical, like a body struggling to remember how to move. As she disappeared into the shadows, I turned towards another room across from me. The door was shut. Moving carefully, I rose from my chair, cautious not to make a sound over the shifting groan of the house and the storm beating its fists against the world outside. I crept towards the door, fingers wrapping around the handle. It turned easily, the door pushing open with a reluctant creak. Inside, two large dog cages sat against the far wall, their heavy metal bars rusted but still looked strong enough. Each one was locked with a heavy padlock. In the first, a mummified corpse laid crumpled in on itself, the dried remains of a young man. His clothing clung to his bones, skin pulled tight like old leather. Cobwebs stretched between his fingers, webs caught in an open gape of his jaw. Ben? Their son? I didn't know for sure, but whoever it was, he was actually dead. Unlike them. I sucked in a sharp breath, stomach tightening as I clamped a hand over my mouth. The sound of her footsteps stopped. I held still, the silence stretched, pressing in my ears. Then, a shift, a tilt of a head. The man's ear turned slightly, angling towards me like a dog picking up on a distant sound. My heart slammed against my ribs. There was a second kennel, empty. Why? For me? I waited, breath caught in my throat, forcing myself not to move. His head cocked slightly, listening, but then he returned to his stillness. The vacant slits in his head reminded.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Me of something I remember hearing about. How the eyes are the first thing that carrion insects consume when you die, because of how soft they are. Was that happening to them? Her feet resumed their slow, wet shuffle in the back room. Moving carefully, I tiptoed back to the chair, lowering myself into it, hands curled into fists beneath the table. She reemerged a moment later, glancing in my direction. She carried a tray and set it down in front of me. Rusted cans of beans, corn, radishes, and other fruits and veggies sat in a row. The metal was dented, lids peeled open, their edges rimmed with dried blood. Deep grooves from human teeth marked the sides of each can. Inside, a black soup sloshed thickly, rancid and rotting.
"Come, Harold, sit. It's dinner time."
He moved towards the table, dragging the pitchfork beside him. The prongs carved shallow tracks through the damp sludge on the floor. With a deep groan, he dropped into the chair next to me. They ate slowly, deliberately. Fingers dipped into the cans, scooping up the tar-like slop, shoving it between their lips. Chewing, sucking, swallowing wet sounds. Their hollow eyes never left me. A thick dribble of black ichor leaked from the ragged hole in his trachea, soaking into the filth on his overalls. He didn't react. The chewing grew louder, lips smacking, cracked teeth grinding. The sick organic sounds filled the room, drowning out the storm outside. He was too close. His shoulder brushed mine as he hunched over his meal. She sat to my right. Her rotting fingers stirred the sludge in her can.
"Ye gotta eat. Keep your strength up."
She nudged a can towards me. Pickled yams. The smell hit me instantly. Sweetness turned sour. Something squirmed in the black slop. I hesitated, swallowing against the bile rising in my throat. My fingers curled around the rusted can. I took a slow breath and pretended to slurp at it. The smell alone was enough to turn my stomach. But worse was the sight of them, their pale hands working the sludge, their mouth smacking greedily around the rotting pulp of canned fruit and veggies. The rancid odor of botulism. She leaned in close.
"I know you ain't Ben."
I could feel my eyes widen with terror. As she spoke, black droplets splattered onto my sleeve. My heart thumped hard against my ribs, her lips furled into a smile.
"I know you saw Ben in there."
She motioned towards the other room.
"Ben tried to leave, tried to go to that university, but we had work to do here, so much to do on the farm."
Something writhed beneath her scalp, just like in the cans. A yellowed maggot fell from her forehead, wiggling on the table. A bright, searing heat burned in my lungs. I needed to leave, to run, now.
"We couldn't let Ben go. We needed him here with us."
She smiled, her mouth a black, oozing void. I watched the maggot writhe in a slow circle.
"Ben wasn't a survivor. Wasn't built tough. He stopped work in the fields, even after we whipped him. Broke his ankle. Let it heal all wrong so he could wander the property without hobbles. Nothing taught the boy discipline. So we locked him up."
Harold tossed an empty can over his shoulder, belching. A sickly, rotting sweetness filled my nostrils. She chewed at a gristly piece of something. Black ichor dribbled down her chin.
"He stopped moving in there. Couldn't take it. Weak boy. Even Harold and me outlasted him."
She reached for my hand, fingers thin and stringy like piano wires. The flesh was damp, her grip cold and clammy, like a wet fish. Her cracked nails scraped against my skin.
"Harold and me, we tried making more babies. They just kept coming out all wrong. Buried them deep in the fields."
I sat frozen, my mind clawing for sense, for some kind of reality to latch onto. None of this was right. None of this should have been possible. But her touch, deliberate and real, left no room for doubt.
"Then you come along, wandering onto our farm, a strong young man."
Her grip tightened, fingers locking around my wrist.
"You could be the son we deserved. Just need to make a few things clear first."
A blur of movement. Harold shot up from his seat. Before I could react, the pitchfork slammed down hard onto my left hand. The middle bar punched clean through. A gunshot of pain exploded through my body.
"Oh fuck, oh fuck!"
I screamed, falling to my knees. I yanked my hand free from her grip, her nails tearing at my skin.
"God damn it!"
I roared, grasping wildly at the pitchfork's handle. It had been buried deep, the three prongs jutting all the way through the underside of the table, my blood trickling from the tips.
Grab the leg irons, Harold.
I scrambled to my knees, but she only watched, head tilted, listening, that same sick grin stretching her face. Harold's heavy footsteps thudded across the floor, steady, patient, knowing there was nowhere for me to go. If they got those shackles on me, I'd end up like Ben. I'd end up in that cage. My flashlight laid on the ground, its weak beam the only thing keeping the room from total darkness, the same darkness they moved in like blind and naked moles. I lunged for the pitchfork handle, wrenching at it with my free hand, but it wouldn't budge. He had driven it too deep. I climbed onto the table, bracing my legs against its edge and pulled, every muscle straining, my breath coming in ragged gasps.
"Stop it, or I'll put you in that dog cage right now,"
she hissed, sensing what I was doing, her ruined fingers twitching against the table. I pulled harder, veins bulging in my arms, jaw locked tight, my whole body on fire, the wound in my hand screaming as I put every ounce of strength into that handle. The door creaked before me. Harold was coming. I heard the clank of manacles swinging in his hands, his body a shadow moving without urgency, knowing he didn't have to rush. I yanked, pulled. My teeth began to ache. The pitchfork gave way all at once. I staggered back, the table pitching forward beneath my weight, slamming down onto her arm with a grotesque pop, nearly tearing it off from the socket. She made no sound, no scream of pain, only the raspy noise of her breathing as she lifted her head and grinned wider, her lips curling back, black ichor glistening along her gums. I hit the floor hard, my knees sinking into the slick, stinking filth, my boots sliding as I struggled to stand. I had seconds, maybe less. If I didn't move now, I wouldn't get another chance. I bolted towards the door, slipping, catching myself, my pulse hammering in my throat. I heard Harold behind me, moving faster now, charging like a bull, the walls shuddering with his weight. I lunged past my flashlight and wrenched open the storm cellar, throwing my body into it just as his hand shot through the gap. There was no sound, just the awful, meaty crunch as his hand was crushed between the jagged nails on the board that once held the heavy door shut. I watched, frozen, as his fingers flexed once, twice, the raw skin peeling apart, flesh splitting open, dragging slowly backwards through the rusted nails and back into the storm cellar, tearing deep, splitting apart the hand like a ship grinding over a reef. The ruined digits disappeared into the cellar with a thump. I stood there breathless, chest heaving, rain pounding against the earth outside. God, what were they? Were they even people anymore? I rushed towards the barn, feet pounding through the mud, breath burning in my throat. The storm cellar tore open behind me and I was halfway across. I didn't look back, but I heard the splintering wood, the slap of bare feet in the rain. The earth was a mess of deep puddles now, the hail softening into a relentless downpour, soaking through my clothes as I pushed forward. The barn loomed ahead, red and peeling, the place where all of this began. I turned. Through the dark and the rain, I saw them. His massive frame, her hunched, twisted silhouette. They were coming, slow but sure, drawn to the sound of me even over the storm. I had to get my pack. Everything I owned, every piece of my life was in there. Without it, I was as good as dead. Even if it meant risking more, losing more, I had to retrieve it. I reached the barn and yanked the door shut behind me, but the latch was useless, broken on the floor. No way to keep them out. I climbed into the loft, shoving my gear into my pack as fast as my shaking hands allowed. They were close now. I buried myself in a pile of soiled hay, curled tight, pulling more over me, barely breathing.
"Shoulda hobbled you the second I saw ya,"
she muttered from below. The tension coiled tight, a wire stretched to its breaking point. He wouldn't be able to follow me here. Too big, too heavy. But she could. I heard her hands scrambling against the rungs of the ladder, her feet clumsy as she climbed. The wood groaned under her weight. Then there was a wet, uneven shuffle. She was on all fours now, crawling across the loft, sifting through the hay. I held my breath. She was inches away, close enough that I could make out the thin, cracked line of her lips, the way they barely covered the dark gums beneath. Close enough that the stink of her clung to the air, thick with the sweetness of decay. I heard her tongue move inside her mouth, restless, shifting. Her ruined hand, swollen and trembling, dropped into the straw beside my leg. A strand of spit dangled from her lips. I felt it land on my shirt. I forced my eyes shut, clenching my teeth, willing my body to stay still even as my muscles burned with the need to move. My leg cramped hard, but I swallowed the pain, the panic. She sniffed once, her fingers curled into the straw. The silence stretched, thick and suffocating. The smell of her filled my mouth, my lungs, the back of my throat. Then she shifted, stilled, decided. And she retreated, crawling back down the ladder without a word. I stayed frozen, barely daring to breathe, listening as they rifled through the stalls below, kicking through piles of garbage and rotted hay. I waited, long after she left, long after I heard his heavy boots drag away. 30 minutes? An hour? Maybe more. Only when the rain stopped and the first thin light pushed through the slats of the barn did I move. I slipped down, careful, silent, my wounded hand throbbing deep in my bones. I noticed no birds chirped, no crickets called, no frogs croaked. The land was eerie in its silence, dead in its stillness, cursed, poisoned. For a moment, I almost convinced myself none of it had happened, that these things were just delusions, paranoia brought on by exhaustion and old habits clawing at the edges of my mind. But as I crept out of the barn, I saw the soil trampled on by many footprints. Some were mine. Most were not. If you're a fellow drifter, if you ever pass an abandoned red barn in the middle of nowhere, keep on walking.